Theodore Roosevelt said it's not the critic who counts. It's not the man who points out how the strong man stumbles or where the doer of deeds could have done them better. The credit belongs to the man who is actually in the arena, whose face is marred by dust and sweat and blood, and who strives valiantly, who errs, who comes up short again and again. Because there is no effort without error and shortcoming. But who does actually strive to do the deeds? Who knows great enthusiasm, the great devotion, who spends himself in a worthy cause? Who at the best knows in the end the triumph of high achievement, and who at the worst, if he fails, at least fails while daring greatly, so that his place shall never be with those cold and timid souls who neither know victory nor defeat. Welcome back to the MCP. My name is Rick Alexander, and today I want to talk to the people in the arena, the people that are actually striving to create a better life, for this life of growth. Because it's real easy for us to start playing the critic in our life if we stop striving. And there's all kinds of reasons for why we could stop striving. And so that's what we'll talk about today. I think that I really want to speak to those of us who have a deep understanding that life is not, nor has it ever been, a spectator sport. I'm talking about the people who care and strive and that just allow the struggle they find to positively change them so that they might continue to stay in the fight, continue to better themselves, continue to grow. People who aren't content to sit back idly and watch, but continue to show up again and again. Honestly, despite the absolutely tremendous amount of pain that's incurred within the process of actually trying to become a better human and achieve something worthy. There comes a point in all of our lives where we have to decide what kind of person we want to be. In doing so, we're deciding what kind of life we're going to live. And if we choose not to decide, tends to be life that just decides for us. And when we shrink from the responsibility to go out and cultivate what we want and need, we find that over time we become a much worse version of ourselves. Even in the space of denying our own call to adventure, we can see an atrophy in our own courage. Should we choose to stay in this place where we're safe from failure and perhaps that same distance away from success, we become susceptible to playing the role of the critic. The one who props their own ego up with talk in place of action. The one who thinks the quarterback playing in the rain should have done better as we analyze and judge from the safety and comfort of our box seats. The problem is, there's no substitute in life for the struggle. It is the inclement weather that forges the spirit of a champion. And it's just because you have inclement weather doesn't mean you're going to be a champion. It means it's giving you the opportunity to overcome it and become it. And so should we decide to be the one in the inclement weather ourselves, to stand up to the unknown that is presented by our own call to adventure, whatever that might be, we find a reclamation of what we've been missing. We find courage and devotion and strength, and we don't reclaim these things due to vanity. We do it because standing with the weight of the world on your back is all but impossible without them. If our story is going to be great, it is the character of the character that matters most. When we answer our life's invitation to be more, to live a deeper experience and a greater story, whether it through relationship or through some sort of experience that we feel compelled toward, we find that our ideas of success are far more fun to entertain than the toil and struggle that they actually incur. What you find in a life of stretching yourself beyond your means and perpetually committing to finding your edge in different forms is that the endeavor isn't about the what, it's about the who. See, your arena and mine might be different. And as a result, we might be tempted to do the human thing and assign a hierarchical value toward them, because we're always comparing ourselves to everybody else. Like maybe in your mind, your job has prestige and mine doesn't, or vice versa. Maybe you don't answer your call because you look around and see other people who don't seem to struggle with things that you perceive as greater or better than your own, and so you draw a conclusion about your own worth or try to play it small. We tend to convince ourselves that we don't have a right to our own feelings or hardship if we focus on everyone else's. And that's the problem with comparison. It'll rob you out of what you do have. But pain can't be quantified based on someone else's experience, only our own. Whenever we stand up to fight the dragon and rescue the girl or guy in our adventure, we find the dragon knows exactly who we are, right? Like whenever we go after something in life, it knows where our insecurities lie and where we tend to stumble. If you're engaged in the right fight, it's going to demand all of you. If you critique others, your uninformed criticism only serves to remind you of where you've walked away from your own truth. Or perhaps, after failure, you don't return to the arena because you can't bear the thought of going back to that place. But the arena, i.e. like a life of striving for what we want, is indifferent to comparison, fear, or whatever we tell ourselves when we're alone. It rewards those who show up with their eyes open, completely aware of how much it all can hurt, but steadfast nonetheless. When you're 15 years old and you fall in love for the first time, life is giving you a taste of how incredible it can be. In a sense, you get the reward before the process, perhaps because God knows if you didn't experience the inside of Eden, you'd never be tempted to try and work your way back to it. But nevertheless, what you have will be taken, and your heart will be broken, and we all know this, right? As your heart gets broken, the naivety that you've been living in gets shattered. And in the hero's journey, this is usually when we embark on our trip to the underworld. This is where you find out whatever the arena really wants to show you. Because it's only after you know how bad it all can go, when you know how much it all can hurt, but choose to answer the call to love again, that you find out what love is actually about. In that same way, it's only after returning to the arena, once it throws us out after a loss, that we learn how to fight within it. You'll be exposed over and over again to whatever you find in the arena. Your heart won't get broken only once. You won't only shoulder a single failure. You won't fall just one time. The arena has built in its path the mechanism to ensure that we actually learn the lessons. The gatekeeper to whatever we're looking for can't be fooled. It's only valor born on top of persistence that holds the key to their gates. It's worth mentioning here that we don't have to do any of this, that our free will isn't only found in our ability to choose heaven or hell, but instead to willingly walk through hell for the heaven that we're actually after. We always have the choice of sitting on the sidelines and holding out for the right time or the right opportunity or the right whatever. But because we only meet the person we were meant to be amidst the struggle of what doesn't go right, it's worth mentioning that that time may never actually come. We may lie in wait only to find that our window has closed. I'm reminded in this moment of my favorite quote from Marcus Aurelius. It's out of his book Meditations, in which he says, "Remember how long you've been putting this off, how many extensions the gods gave you, and you didn't use them. At some point, you have to recognize what world it is that you belong to, what power rules it, and from what source you spring, that there's a limit to the time assigned to you, and if you don't use it to free yourself, it will be gone and will never return." The thing is, our true potential doesn't come out from its internal caverns without a fight. Quite literally, our potential isn't revealed without an obstacle. We're similar to the plants you see crawling along interwoven pieces of latticework in front of the great castles. We need something to object to reality so that we can grow against it. As much as we might want to fight this fact, we're all inextricably linked in this life, at least, both to each other and to our problems. Our entire world is a subject-object relationship, meaning we only know ourselves in relation to other things. See, if a single ball were floating in unlimited space in every direction, it would be impossible to know anything about that ball. Is it moving forward or backward? Is it traveling fast or slow? We only get that information when we figure out what the object is in relation to. Everything about our world relies on another if it wants to know anything at all about itself. In that same way, our potential inside lies dormant, like a ball in space, something only one step above non-existence. But when we find the right problem to solve, when the right thing objects to our reality, it calls to our potential like a siren, coaxing it out reluctantly as our environment slowly but surely demands more and more of us. We, who might dare to wonder where the outer limits of our capabilities lie, are, as it goes, eternally tied to the pain teacher in all of its many lessons. We're eternally obligated to enter the arena if we wish to know who and what we truly are. The critic creates their own hell, as they'll never actually be permitted to know these things. It's kind of like Seneca said, "I judge you unfortunate because you've never lived through misfortune. You've passed through life without an opponent. No one can ever know what you're capable of, not even you." Anyway, little Friday fire for you. Love you guys. We'll chat Monday on the MCB.